L.W. Williams, Imperial War Museum, accession number 11542/4, reel 4.
Mr. Williams, reel 4. Now, you mentioned earlier about the sinking of the Dutch ship, the SS Van Warwick.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me in detail what you remember about that?
Well, all I can remember is the fact that we left Medan en route to Singapore with 700 people on board, which was packed in the forward and after hatches. And the hatches were only about, say, 4 foot high, so he was crammed in there. And we were, I think, if I'm rightly in saying, around a bit midday, we had an explosion forward and one midships. And we heeled over, and we were sunk within half an hour. The actual ship went right down to Van Warwick, and I particularly, with two or three of my chums, were very, very lucky because every hour, 2 hours, they used to let people up from the upper deck, from down below to the upper deck to get fresh air, because it was so stifling down below that every bit of section they used to let up top for a breather and then come back down again. And we were very, very lucky, because as we were coming down to the hatch down below, we were torpedoed. So the hatch started to flood, and we were floated out of the ship. And the Japanese other ships that were in the convoy didn't lower any, but they lowered some boats eventually. But they only picked up the Japanese survivors, and they took them back to the ship. But all the prisoners of war had to swim to the side of the ships and climb up the scrambling nets. And then we were just berthed on the upper deck of the tankers, and until we got to Singapore.
What happened to those who couldn't swim?
Well, those that couldn't swim, I mean, if they weren't helped by their chums, then they were just left. And there was quite a few of them. But, I mean, majority of them were got together by their chums, and, you know, we managed to get them to the side of the ship. And or else, if there was some debris around, then, you know, the debris was pulled to the side of the ship with the chaps clinging on board.
Were there any sharks about?
Not at that particular time. Because at the time, the convoy was being escorted by Japanese destroyers, and they were at the same time as we'd been torpedoed, as soon as we'd been torpedoed, I should have said, they were dropping depth charges. So I should imagine that kept the sharks away anyway.
Did you see Judy pushing the wood towards survivors?
Definitely see Judy pushing the wood towards the survivors who couldn't swim. Definitely. And she was absolutely marvellous. She, you know, even right through all the prisoner of war time, right through to when we were first sunk on the Dragonfly and Grasshopper and on the island when she found water, she'd been, you know, marvellous right throughout the prisoner of war time. And even surviving the Van Warwick, then, you know, she survived the railway building as well.
How were you treated once you got on board the Japanese ship after being in the sea?
Not very well, because we weren't supplied with any food or anything until we got to Singapore, until we transferred to the River Valley Road Camp.
Any drink?
Only what we could scrounge. They didn't bring any rain to us. And in fact, I think they looked upon us as a hardship, but naturally they wanted to keep as many of us as possible, I suppose, because the fact that we were being taken across to Sumatra to build the railway anyway, so they wanted as many people as they could.
The voyage of the Van Warwick, though, was from Sumatra to Singapore, was it, when it
was
sunk?
Yes, yes, yeah, yeah. Yes.
Now, everybody knows about the death railway of Thailand to Burma, but you were on a different railway.
Yes, we were on the the Pakenbarrow Railway. It's termed, it's named as the Pakenbarrow Railway.
How do you spell Pakenbarrow?
P-A-K-E-N. B-A... B-A-R-O-E. Barrow. I think that's the... I can confirm that in a minute with the, in the book. It'll tell us in the book.
And this railway was meant to be built from Pakenbarrow to Medan?
I think the ultimate destination was up to Medan, yes.
When were you put to work on that?
Oh, I should have to think there. This was after we were sunk in 43. And we sunk on the SS Van Warwick. I can't think of the date of the sinking of the Van Warwick now.
On these notes, you've written the 24th of June 1944.
Yeah, well, that would be a month after that then. That would be a month after that that we were starting to build the railway. Because we were then taken across from Singapore by riverboat across to up the... Indigiri up to Pakenbarrow itself, the base camp.
What kind of work did you do on the railway construction?
I was in charge of the rail laying gang. That's after the sleepers had been laid, and then the rails come along, and we had about 8 or 9 people on a rail, and because it was a tricky situation, picking up the rails, putting them on your shoulders, and marching along to where the sleepers had been laid, and then getting hold of them, and you had to more or less give a definite order, because if not, if you didn't, because you had no, half the time you didn't have any shoes, and if you landed a sleeper down, you could, you know, injure some people. So we had to work out a method where you had, by numbers, you put it in a certain position, and as you took it off your shoulder, you held it and then put it down on the sleeper. So you actually held it there as you put it down. Because the sleepers were loose at the time, and if they weren't true, then the sleepers could come up. And, you know, at the first started off, we had a lot of injuries when we were laying the sleepers, and of course, you had Japanese guards around you. So you had to be very, very careful when you were laying the sleepers.
Were there any deaths or serious injuries on the railway?
Well, one time, in my particular instance, we were in the jungle, because we'd rung out of sleepers, and we were in the jungle cutting down trees for the sleeper party to cut up and make into sleepers. And I had a Corporal Smith with me when we were axing down the trees. And we had a Japanese corporal who was a real savage individual. And... this Lance Corporal Smith was talking to a chum, and as he brought his axe up to hit the tree, he was still talking. This Japanese guard came along and hit him on the head, and as he hit him on the head, so this corporal brought the axe down, and it went right down the side of his foot and opened up all his foot. And you can just imagine the sight of it. While he was... eventually taken, the corporal told us to take him to the base of the railway where the train stopped, which brought us to work, and eventually that would take him back to the bait to the camp. Well, when we went back at 7 o'clock in the evening, this poor corporal was still laying there. So we managed to get him on the train, take him back to camp, and by that time everything had set in. Because we put a tourniquet and everything on, but the doctor couldn't cure it, and he was taken back to base camp at Pakenbarrow, and was operated on, and he had his leg amputated. Well, I know he survived because when I came back after the war, I had notification from the war crimes people to attend a meeting up in, I think it was in Wardour Street in London, because this corporal, the authorities wanted to know how he lost his leg, and he told them, and I give him my name while we were prisoners to say that when he got home, if he reached home, to quote my name as a witness to what happened. And I had to go up and swear an affidavit that all what he'd said and what I'd said was true. Because then they said that I might have to go to the war crimes trial in Singapore. But I wasn't eventually sent for anyway.
Who was the guard?
We used to call him the... he was very, very dark-skinned, and we used to call him the Black Corporal. But I don't know... I can't remember his name now. As regards Japanese names, anyway.
Was he Japanese or Korean?
No. He was Japanese, because he was on the railway. It was only in the Koreans that were in the camp that used to guard us. The Japanese used to work outside, and the Koreans used to guard us inside the camp.
Was there much difference between the way the Koreans behaved and the Japanese?
I suppose there was, because of the fact that the Koreans used to hate the Japanese and the Japanese used to hate the Koreans, and we were the ploy in the middle. And if they were, had a difference of opinion between the two of them, then they used to take it out on us.
But you didn't get any better treatment from one?
No, none at all.
How did the Japanese generally supervise the work on the railway?
Pretty strict, because you used to have to, when we first started off, they said we had to complete a certain section in a certain time, and then once we'd done that, then we'd finish for the day. Well, naturally, you know, you finished it, and you used to rush and get it finished. Well, they thought, well, we can get some extra time, extra lengths made out of this, so they extended it another hour. And you'd finish at that time, and the next minute they'd extend it at that time. So it increased to, say, about 7 or 8 o'clock at night, and you'd start, you know, soon after daylight. So they increased the time. And then, of course, if you slowed up, then, you know, you stopped there until you'd finished your length that you're supposed to do each day. So it was, you punished yourself more or less when you first started off. But, you know, we learned a lesson anyway in the end. So it... because we had one section when we completed one section one time, and we went back the next day to go up past that section we completed to do it, and found it all mangled and everything, because there was a herd of elephants come through the jungle, and it upset all the railway, because it was all newly laid. So we had that particular day and the section we should have completed, we had to do all again, you know. You know, and no extra rations or anything like that. Yeah.
Did you sabotage the work?
Well, I won't say that we sabotaged the work, but let's say when we'd laid the railway, when we'd laid the rails, the gang that came behind us to peg the sleepers in to make sure they were the rocks and that were hammered into the, that they were just knocked in loose and more or less, you know, and that's the thing that worried us when we came back, when we were released from prisoner of war, when we came back on the train 180 mile up the jungle. You think, goodness me, is the track going to be safe enough for us to get back, knowing how we'd built it, you know? And everybody was apprehensive. And when we got back to the base camp, we were there, I suppose, a week. And the first person to enter our camp from outside was Lady Mountbatten. She was the first person to come in our camp. And she was excellent, because no sooner she came, she toured the camp, and then she left the same day. And within a couple of days, we had boats in and goodness knows what in the river, taking all the sick and wounded and goodness knows what away. She was very, very marvellous, she was. She organised everything. Because she got in touch with her husband, who was Lord Mountbatten, who was out there at the time.
Where was this base camp?
At Pakenbaru.
Whereabouts at Pakenbaru?
It was in Sumatra.
But whereabouts in the town?
Oh. I wouldn't like to. I wouldn't like to say where the. I couldn't just describe where the.
Had you constructed the base camp yourself?
We constructed the base camp ourselves. Yes.
From what?
Or from jungle timber and anything you could get hold of, to make the huts that you lived in. I mean, they're only made of attap, you know, and bits of fir trees or you know trees from the jungle and things like that. Yeah. Because the base camp consisted of the main hospital, you know, where the sick used to come from the different sections of the railway. Because you had different sections of the railway. As you completed that bit, then that camp would move on to the next one, and that one would move on to this one, you know, where they used to put up different sections for stores and that along the way and things like that, for Japanese stores, that is. You know, when they would eventually open the main railway right through, so they had communications right down the Sumatra.
Was it just British on the railway, working on the railway?
Oh no, there's British and Australian. We had an American in our particular camp, and Dutch. Quite a few Dutch, because naturally they were, you know, it was a Dutch East Indies at that particular time, or was anyway. Yeah.
How did you all get on together, the different nationalities?
Very well, very well. You had to, because if you didn't, and you argued and all that amongst yourselves, then you know that made matters worse anyway. The only thing that made it a bit awkward is the fact that the Dutch, you know, had all their kit and everything, you know, because they were captured with their full kit and everything, whereas we had nothing. We used to just wear loincloths.
What rations were you given working on the railway?
Well, for breakfast we used to have, we used to call it ongle ongle, which was like a jelly pap, which was no substance in it at all. And then the next meal was when we came home at night, which was just rice. And until we found out what the natives lived on, and then we found that they used to find what they call sweet potato in the jungle. And that you could uproot. And if you peeled, make sure you peeled the skin off, because the skin was poisonous. But the potato inside was all right. Well, you used to bring some of that home if you could pass the Japanese guards, and then cook that and mix that up with the rice and things like that. You just used to scrounge things as best you could. Because, there was no villages that you could go through and try to get food or anything like that. You just have to do the best you could. It was only rice that we used to live on, just boiled rice.
What would happen if the guards detected the sweet potatoes?
They'd take them away from you and keep them themselves, because they weren't being fed very well anyway. I mean, they were short of food as well. Yeah. Yeah.
You told me about some leaves which were used, which had iron in them.
Yeah, we noticed the natives that were preparing the foundation of the railway up in the jungle, and we used to notice that their fingers were green. So we asked them, you know, why they were so green, and they showed us the plant, and they used to go down to the bottom of the plant and bring their fingers up, those two particular fingers, and if the leaves were tender and ready for eating, they used to come away quite easy, and they'd bring the leaves up and put them in their pocket, and when they got back to camp, they used to chop them up, small pieces, and put them in the mixing with the rice, because the leaves had iron in them, and it done them good. And that's what we used to do in the end.
Do you think it did you any good?
Well, I hope it did. I've survived anyway, so it's...
Did you fall sick yourself, working on the road?
Yes, I had malaria and beriberi. And I was... when I went over in the Van Warwick, I damaged my leg there, which is partially broken, but it healed up eventually. And but other than that, you know, compared with what a lot of people got, I was very, very lucky.
Were you ever beaten as a punishment?
No. I kept out of that trouble. I mean, I, if I'd have been caught, I'd have been punished. But being, I was only, 21 then, I suppose, 21, 22. So I was fairly fit and agile and that. So.
Caught doing what?
Well, lots of times, before we were on the railway, when we were in the docks at Medan and places like that, or in Padang, there was ample time to that you could pinch food and things like that if you was out in the docks and things like that. And we used to try and work a system that we'd pass it to one another, so that we wouldn't get caught, because the punishment, you know, was in some camps and even in our camps was isolation, you know, where you was put in a hole and it was just a trap over the top and you was left there with no food or anything. And if you survived umpteen days and you came out of that, well then, you know, you'd suffer quite a bit.
And did you see anybody receive that punishment?
Oh yes, I did, yeah. One particular chap named Holehouse, who's passed away now actually, who was with us, he had that punishment.
What was that for?
For stealing food, you know, for scrounging food.
How many days was he in it?
He was in for about 50 days. Terrible, yeah.
50 days,
yeah.
Without being fed? Or?
Well, he used to have some water, and it was in a position where sometimes we used to drop food into him. Terrible he was. Oh.
Where did he come from?
He settled down in Plymouth, but I think he was up the Midlands somewhere. I wouldn't know. We had notification about 2 years ago that he'd passed away, because he used to be one of our team on the Dragonfly.
When you went to Singapore as a POW, what happened to you there?
Well, after we were released.
No, did you go to Singapore, actually, as a POW captivity?
Yeah, after the Van Warwick, we went to Singapore. And then we went to a place called River Valley Road Camp. And we were there a month, just licking our wounds and, you know, getting refreshed again and attended to injuries and that. And then as soon as everybody was near enough fit, those that weren't fit, we took to Changi and put in Changi. But the rest of us were taken across to Pakenbarrow, then Sumatra, to start the railway.
So you didn't work in River Valley Road Camp?
Oh, no, we were only just there just to recuperate and after the sinking of the Van Warwick.